Jesus outlined a three-step process that is intended to make peace between Christian brothers. However, it is apparent that the judicial process is not primarily intended to establish the guilt of the accused. It is already a given that there has been a sin committed, even as Jesus said, "If your brother commits a sin, go lay bare his fault." The intent of the inquest is to convince the guilty party of his guilt, laying bare his fault, in order to move him to repentance. Furthermore, Jesus did not say that the one or two outside witnesses that are brought in had to be witnesses to the specific act that caused offense. The accuser brings along one or two witnesses in order that they may be witnesses to the fact that the accuser at least tried to gain his brother. They also may be witnesses to the validity of the charges and give additional reproof to the wrongness of the act committed. Also, the third step in the process Jesus outlined does not establish guilt either. It is the burden of the accused to listen to the reproof of the congregation or else face ostracism. At any step along the way, if the accused admits to the accusations and takes appropriate steps toward repentance, the accuser regains his lost relationship with his brother. If the accused refuses to accept guilt or responsibility, the congregation may withdraw their hand of friendship. The Watchtower claims to follow this legal precept of Christ, and so therefore insists that, in the absence of a confession, there must be at least two witnesses to the actual crime of child abuse in order to substantiate the accusation of the abuse victim. Without a second witness, and without a confession, no judicial action may be taken against the accused abuser. The matter is just dropped, and as the Watchtower is so very fond of saying, the victim is told to wait on Jehovah to set things straight. This appears to be a gross misapplication and perversion of Christ's law to the congregation. According to Jesus, even if the accused refuses to acknowledge the reproof of the congregation, he is to be viewed as being guilty if the evidence warrants that judgment. Jesus did not instruct his followers to simply drop the matter if the offender refuses to take responsibility for his actions. The Watchtower has announced to the public that Jehovah's Witnesses abhor child abuse, that Bethel's actions belie that claim. Instead of allowing congregation elders to make their own thorough investigation of these abhorrent crimes, as was called for in the Jewish law, perhaps even availing themselves of professional police investigators and forensic evidence, the Watchtower's legal department has used the very law of God to tie the hands of congregational elders and has therefore denied justice and protection to thousands of victims of child abuse. As a result of this wicked policy, pedophiles have been shielded from exposure, and other innocent children have been recklessly exposed to the depredations of child molesters within the congregations of Jehovah's Witnesses. In certain cases, reported by victims' advocates, the courts have found the crimes committed by some of Jehovah's Witnesses, so-called, to be so heinous that the abusers were convicted and sentenced to long prison terms, even though the congregations took no action whatsoever against the perpetrators. In one nationally publicized case in New Hampshire, in order to defend the society's coffers from a civil judgment, the Watchtower even provided free legal representation to a convicted pedophile that had received a 56-year prison sentence, representation that is reputed to have cost $500,000. Meanwhile, not one cent was spent ministering to the victims of his crimes. Think about the implications of the society's doings. They are willing to spend untold sums of money, donated by hard-working Jehovah's Witnesses, to the God-ordained Christian evangelizing work in order to publicly defend and support convicted pedophiles so as to avoid admitting error or compensating the victims of their harmful policies. Is that not a case of turning justice into wormwood? Another instance, this one in Washington State, USA, is the case of young Erica Rodriguez, who, while between the ages of 4 and 11, was raped on a weekly basis by Manuel Belis, an elder in her congregation. When she dutifully went to the elders to report the crime, no doubt imagining she would receive some sort of justice, she was told that the matter would be handled. Nothing was ever done. The crimes were not even reported to the police in violation of Washington state law. Apparently, there was no collaborating testimony of an independent witness to verify Erica's accusation, so the matter was just brushed aside. Not only was nothing done to the abuser, Erica was threatened with disfellowshipping if she spoke about the matter with anyone in the congregation. It seems as if poor Erica was raped again. The first time by the despicable Manuel Belis, and then again by the entire body of elders and the legal department of the Watchtower, Inc. However, against the orders of her feckless congregational elders, Erica eventually did report the rapes to the police, and Manuel Belis is behind bars, serving an 11-year sentence. Jehovah apparently deemed it necessary to use his civil servants to do what the organization's shepherds refused to do. Unfortunately, the case of Erica Rodriguez is not uncommon. According to Law.com, a widely read journal for lawyers, an attorney by the name of Kimberly Norris has been contacted by over 2,000 victims of abuse from among Jehovah's Witnesses. Another case involved Amy B. versus the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. Apparently, Larry Kelly was an elder in the Dumas, Texas congregation at the time he sexually abused a child. To his credit, the abuser confessed to his fellow overseers and was removed as an elder. Sometime later, however, Brother Kelly moved to another congregation in Amarillo, Texas. In keeping with procedure, the Dumas elders notified the Amarillo elders of Larry Kelly's past offense. Although Kelly was not appointed as an elder in the Amarillo congregation, he evidently was allowed to lead the field service group. By doing so, he won the trust of the unsuspecting brothers and sisters, young 8-year-old Amy being one of them. But the issue at stake is not that Larry Kelly molested another victim. The real issue is that the friends in the Amarillo congregation were not notified by their local elders that a known sexual predator had moved into their congregation from Dumas. Perhaps one could argue that it was an oversight on their part, a mistake, which, as egregious as it may have been, is certainly forgivable. But in arguing the case, the Watchtower's hired lawyer claimed that congregation elders have no responsibility whatsoever to protect congregants from sexual predators. On the Law.com website can be found the following excerpt. Quote, Marvin W. Jones, a shareholder in Amarillo's Sprouse Shader Smith, who represents the Jehovah's Witness organization at the congregational levels, has offered a spirited defense against Amy B.'s suit. Collectively representing all the Watchtower defendants, he wrote in a motion for summary judgment that his clients owed no duty to protect Amy B. from the crime of a congregant. Besides, he argued, the First Amendment also bars the suit. End quote. Just how is it that shielding sexual predators from exposure might fall under the Watchtower's First Amendment right of freedom of religion is anyone's guess. But if the Watchtower and her elders are not duty-bound to at least try and protect Jehovah's little sheep from becoming the prey of greedy sexual perverts, why do they insist on being called shepherds in the first place? What are shepherds supposed to do if not protect the sheep? Jesus is called the chief shepherd, and he gave his life for Jehovah's sheep. The Watchtower's lawyers, on the other hand, have repudiated Christianity itself and denied God and Christ. Amos 6:12 is quite fitting. For into a poisonous plant you people have turned justice, and the fruitage of righteousness into wormwood. Elders are all the more accountable before God in view of the undeniable fact that it is deeply inculcated into Jehovah's Witnesses to trust and rely upon their congregation overseers. Jehovah's Witnesses are trained to consult with their elders on all weighty matters of life. It would, in fact, be unthinkable for anyone in the congregation to report a sexual crime to the police without the consent of the elders. And as numerous documented court records show, the elders often order the victims' families not to contact the police. While the Watchtower's legal department hypocritically appeals to the law of Moses in regards to the need for two witnesses in child abuse cases, under different circumstances, the Watchtower alternately argues that the law of Moses is not binding upon Christians. Yet the Watchtower's own policies violate key principles embodied in the law. For example, Exodus 21, 28-29 states, "And in case a bull should gore a man or a woman, and that one actually dies, the bull is to be stoned without fail, but its flesh is not to be eaten, and the owner of the bull is free from punishment. But if a bull was formerly in the habit of goring, and warning was served on its owner, but he would not keep it under guard, and it did put a man or a woman to death, the bull is to be stoned, and also its owner is to be put to death." According to God's law, the owner of a bull who knew that the animal in his possession posed a danger to others and yet did not take appropriate measures to protect the unwary from being gored, and someone ended up being gored to death by the bull, then the negligent owner was held accountable for murder. The principle certainly applies in cases where child predators are allowed to remain in congregations and the elders neglect to even warn parents and children of the lurking danger. In the case of Larry Kelly, he even confessed to the Dumas elders, and the Amarillo elders knew of his crime as well, but allowed Brother Kelly to serve alongside his unsuspecting brothers and sisters. Clearly, in accord with the principle of law regarding the negligent owner of a goring bull, the elders who knew of Kelly's perverse propensities were responsible to warn the families in their charge and make sure that he was never allowed to befriend the children in the congregation. In this, they failed to provide even a modicum of protection. But alas, the local elders were not the only ones at fault. The Watchtower's policy prevented the elders from doing what any decent person would consider to be the right and sensible thing to do. Indeed, had the elders disregarded the mandate from the legal department, they likely would have been removed from their positions as overseers.